Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagmann Report. We have a special guest with us, and folks, I want you to check out his website, warriorpoetsociety.us. That's warriorpoetsociety.us, and from there you can subscribe to John's YouTube channel, which I had a chance to play around with and look at earlier. He's got a bunch of very informative videos ranging from a number of topics, from survival to preparedness to self-defense to a number of other things. I would urge everybody to check that out. Before the break, we were talking about the climate in this country, the political climate that really has spiraled out of control. And we know that the forces behind it are not really of this world. And that's another conversation for another day. But, John, what do you recommend when we see things happening, especially from this last election cycle? You know, Donald Trump being one of the presidential candidates, obviously the winner. Hillary Clinton the other. There was a number of rallies, each of them held. And Trump had a lot of enthusiasm and a lot more people in attendance at his rallies. And it was the area where some of the people from the opposition would come and start trouble, start fights, start violence, and they would turn around and blame that on Trump. But that's besides the point. I don't remember a time, I'm only 34, I don't remember a time in history where, you know, people would get beat up for walking down the street with a Trump hat or a Make America Great Again hat or attending a political rally just because the opposition despises what you stand up for. And I think it's only going to continue to get worse because the level of conditioning and brainwashing by the people in charge of the public has seemed to work to a great degree. So I said all that to say this. From attending a political rally to even showing support for, we'll say, somebody like Trump with a t-shirt or a hat or even a bumper sticker on your car, what type of what do you suggest? Well, obviously the people who do this now are being targeted, and it's become dangerous in certain cities like New York City. People have been getting beat up on the subway and in many other places, you know, getting assaulted just for supporting their political candidate. In this intense, increased atmosphere of violence, any suggestions on what the average politically active person can do?
Yeah, that's tough. Politics is one of the areas in life that, you know, you hear people from maybe a different mindset say, you know, never talk about politics or money or religion. Because it'll just, and so they really just try to defer, and they don't want to talk about those things because they can be potentially incendiary. But if you eliminate those things, you just eliminated kind of everything worth talking about, in the sense that everything's kind of based off that. It all hinges on that.
Right, it's everything important.
So I'm not very politically outspoken. And I think that that's something that I need to grow into. I guess probably if I had an explanation, not an excuse, my explanation would go something like this. The conduit which I receive information through is the media. Do I trust the information that I'm getting is good and holistic so that I can make good decisions based upon it? And so it's kind of like if you answer that question with no, then you have to choose between being misinformed or uninformed. And either way, I don't like either of those options. And they're mutually exclusive. And so I think a lot of the social media stuff that's going on, stuff like we're doing right now, is a way to kind of sidestep mainstream media, because I find people want truth. Some of them do. Sorry. A lot of people want truth. I want truth. I really do. Even the painful stuff. Give it to me. I'm a big boy. I'll take it. Anyway, I really do want truth. Some folks want their truth. And that gets into the kind of the other side. So, you know, you mentioned political division. Man, are you right on that? We are so sharply politically divided that it's not like, you know, we have different political preferences now, like as if, you know, you like chocolate and I like vanilla, which, by the way, is the better flavor objectively. It's not like we just have different preferences. It's that the liberal typically has an entirely different mindset, like an entirely different epistemology in which they process the world through. It's
very much.
And because of that, all of our presuppositions are so diametrically different that, of course, we're going to come to very different conclusions. And if I started with their presuppositions, I'd probably make similar arguments. I guess that's just speaking to the sharp and unfortunate division, which I think is far less having to do with preference. I think the issue is more of a root concern. It's a heart issue. It's a kind of in the inner deepest recesses of what builds your worldview and philosophy. They're just so wildly different that the two sides can't even communicate because we can't even understand where the other one's coming from. And in that world where it's humanism versus some type of theism, or deism, whatever ism that you are on the other side of humanism, the other looks like devils. You know, I'm a millennial just like you. Me and you are the oldest of the millennials. You said you're 34, I'm 35. So we're the very oldest of the millennials. And our generation just sucks. We just suck. Is that fair? Is that fair?
Oh, it's very fair. And you got into something that I really wish I could had more time to get into in the first segment, which is the level of the differences between these two groups and the spiritual nature behind it, because this is just, it's more than just people and followers of people and influence getting these ideas and moving this agenda forward. There is and always has been a spiritual darkness, a satanic movement, and unfortunately these people have fallen victim to this delusion. And I'm not saying that Republicans aren't under that delusion. Republicans are just as much under that delusion. And this is why we have to make the distinction that, you know, the left and the right, for the most part, are the same, on the same team. You have a few standouts from each one who want to tell the truth, but the spiritual forces behind this have really done something to socially engineer the society in a way where they have commanded complete control over these people's mind under a fault by changing the perception in reality. That with some form of New Age spiritualism consisting of fake compassion and the right not to be offended. And it is contrary to any and everything a free society stands up for. Yeah. And that's very frustrating.
The top virtue of our generation, me and yours, the millennials, which is the biggest generation now in the United States, making it... quit growing in power as the builders or the boomers are passing the torch. We are already the most powerful generation now and will only gain power, which is terrifying because we have no idea what we're doing. The tolerance is really our top virtue. One of my favorite writers, he's the guy I read to really just kind of make me think. He's a philosopher, 20th century philosopher, G.K. Chesterton. And Chesterton said that tolerance is the virtue of a people without convictions. Meaning, if you don't really believe anything, one way or the other, tolerate everyone else's perspective or viewpoint. I think tolerance is important. I don't want to minimize that, but to exalt tolerance, the top virtue, is going to result in really, really bad things. Now, my big problem with, if tolerance was really it, then great, but even our millennial generation, and as it's really working out to Trump rallies and Hillary rallies, as Trump supporters are being attacked and beaten down because they're wearing this, this is being done by those millennials and otherwise from the left who are espousing tolerance, 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 and then they go out and they're very, very intolerant. It seems like their tolerance is nothing. Yeah. Tolerance, as long as you agree with us. It has to do with, and I'm not comparing them to Hitler at all. I'm just saying, hey, here's a syllogism. It's Hitler would give peace. Hitler was all about peace. Peace on his own terms, which was intolerable. You couldn't do that.
Yeah.
In which case, you can't do that. And really, peace, which is given by the left, is only on its terms. And they say tolerance, tolerance, tolerance. And then, you'd be like, well, I believe God, the God of the Bible is the only one. And they freak out. But they're not tolerant of that idea.
Do you remember the days, maybe 20 years ago, where one of the biggest criticisms against Christianity was, well, I don't care what you believed, but just keep it to yourself?
Yeah.
And that was the attitude of people who were not Christian. Now, just as you said, under the false guise of tolerance, and I wouldn't call these people Hitler either, but I will call them similar to Nazis, because I believe the next leader of that kind of group that gets elected very much could turn into a Hitler. It's just the way that the atmosphere, the attitudes, and if history repeats itself, it could be very dangerous. But the under the guise of tolerance, they only tolerate what they feel is right and what they have been told to believe. Anything else is hate speech. They're not even intolerant. They're basically, they're when I see the rabid political people on the left doing, it's called projection, where whatever they're guilty of, they're going to throw at you. They're going to what do you mean you don't like Hillary Clinton? You're racist. Just this craziness. And they have absolutely, they're intolerant isn't even a good enough word for how these people are. And I believe it's getting to the point where if their leader gets in place, if there's a leader with that kind of extreme belief, that we will truly see what intolerance is, like in persecution days of the original Christian church. That's my concern with these people.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a simpler guy. I never dreamed Trump would get elected. This shows you how much I know. And Obama was running for his first term. I looked at him and said, here's a guy who won't wear the American pin whenever all the other candidates are lined up. Hand over their heart. He's standing there, folded hands, refusing to say the Pledge of Allegiance. And I watched that, and even with the name Barack Obama, I said to myself, there is no way, absolutely no way. If I was playing the stock market, I would have gone all chips in. No way that guy gets elected, and he gets elected. But no way a second term, and then lo and behold, no way Trump will become the presidential nominee for the Republican Party, and he makes it. No way he beats him. And so I say all that to say I don't know. I can't see it. I don't have that George Orwellian foresight. I don't understand how it all works out, but I do see kind of the writing on the wall in that elimination of the First Amendment. And the attacking of the Second Amendment, which guarantees the First Amendment, it's hard to not, on a daily basis, search any news platform for headlines and not see both of those under attack. The muzzle of political correctness, intolerance, which is so seethingly intolerant. And then I see an apathetic public that is very checked out. And really, I understand why. A lot of them are in my position where they're like, well, just they're either so busy just trying to survive, or they have to choose, like me, to be misinformed or uninformed. So I love what Trump has been doing. And, you know, you may love Trump, you may hate Trump, you may be mixed feelings. I don't really care either way. I'm just saying I love how he's sidestepping the media. I love when he calls them fake news. I love when he goes, and you know, if some of what he does, and some people would say that that's a terrible idea and he needs to stop that and that's unwise, and maybe some of, you know, his tweets or his ideas about how to communicate, maybe that's ill-advised, maybe it's a bad idea, but it's a breath of fresh air against the stifling nature of really kind of getting being slaves to the media. I like that he just bypasses them all together and be like, no. I guess I like the conviction. I guess I like that he's not so political. I guess I like that he seems to be a real person. anyway, just kind of a tangent, but you went political. I'm not very political, but these are some of my raw thoughts.
No, absolutely, and I appreciate you sharing them. And, you know, I'm not going to get into the whole history, how we got into this radio industry. We worked as private investigators for a long time, doing workers' compensation fraud and other types of fraud and investigations. Kind of started as a hobby. And it's picked up, and we've continued to move ahead. But
yeah,
I paid attention to sports. I paid attention to any and everything I could. We'd be on an investigation, and my father would put Rush Limbaugh on, and I'd about break the radio, you know. And yep. It was just me yep. being immature. But I didn't want nothing to do with politics. Once you start getting curious and you start looking into things, and you get the understanding that the world is absolutely not what it's presented to be by anybody, you know, your parents to the TV, and you start, you know, finding certain truths about what's really going on. I mean, in this information age, there's a lot to learn. There's a lot of disinfo out there, but there's a lot to learn. And
sure,
it's like the sports left. I mean, I still find interest in it here and there, but
yeah.
It's like you're fighting an uphill battle getting into politics. The drug police shoveling, you know, one teaspoon of water out of a whole ocean full. But at the same time, somebody's got to call these people out and identify what it is they see as craziness. And I believe that, you know, this country's worked so much up into a frenzy that it's just unbelievable. And, you know, whether you like Donald Trump or not, personally, I don't care. One thing I did not want to see under any circumstances was the Hillary Clinton presidency. And now that we see these same people trying to undermine Trump's presidency, not even really giving him a chance to get some things done. And if his goal is as stated, you know, making the country great again, he'll be the first president that I'll actually give a shot, you know. I'm going to keep the leash tight on that, though, because you know how these people are. But it's a chance. I mean, it's a glimmer of hope.
Sure.
So you got to fight for it.
Absolutely. You know, my background is fighting, security, guns, and we have all of a sudden. I just had a guy carried away talking to you about, I don't know, just kind of the philosophy, socio-political climate, and stuff that's not really in my wheelhouse. It's not my strength. I'm just a dude kind of trying to figure some stuff out. This isn't my, you know, my expertise. And I think we may be remiss if we don't visit some of the stuff that only I could, or I would better speak to than some of the other folks you're used to. So is there anything kind of you'd like to circle around and talk about from a security or gunfighting perspective? Let's do that. They're probably like, hey, why do you got a special ops guy talking about politics? Let him tell
That's
us how
my
to
fault.
Kill everyone.
That's my fault. No,
no, we got carried away, man. We did it. I was all right. Let's dance though. What do you got?
One of the things that we can do when we get into these kind of discussions get an overview of what's going on. And we talk about this a lot, is solutions. What can we do to improve our chances? What can we do to work together? And building a community and a community security plan. I want to get into that. because
yeah.
it's, you know, so many people, the way we live today, right on top of one another, but nobody knows sure. our neighbors. And let's talk about that. What we can do to, just in general, preparing ourselves for anything, whether it's Mother Nature yeah. or, you know, a bunch of Bernie supporters running down the street. What can we do as a community or with ourselves to engage in our community and get our community on board?
Very good. To speak to the problem first, you know, my wife and I got into this show probably a couple years ago, and it's called Doomsday Preppers. I'm sure everybody listening in has watched it, and you have too, right? Doomsday Preppers, is that the name of it?
I've heard about it. I have not seen it, though.
Okay, well, anyway, it's kind of like a reality-type thing where they go around and they find folks that have prepped from around the country, and they look at kind of like, all right, how much food you got stored? How about water? How about firearms? And they go out to the range, and the old man shoots a little bit. And really, I just started watching this with my wife just out of kind of entertainment, and I saw huge storehouses of food and water, supplies, medical, firearms galore. And you'd have this dude with like 100,000 rounds and every gun you can think of. And I'm just kind of looking at this from a security aspect, looking at his fortifications, looking at his plan. And what I did, I was an Army Ranger, which meant we're the premier raid force for the military. You want a city raided, or you want a few houses taken down? Send in Rangers. It will be taken care of. We're the premier raid force. That's what I did, conducting raids, taking over structures, taking down parts of cities, or cities, depending on the size and who we brought to play with. But that was in the wheelhouse. So it's kind of applying my tactical brain of, okay, here's a dude. He's got his house. It's set in whatever place, whether it's rural or urban setting, depending on the episode. And it's just him, his wife, and his two sons, and they've got all these guns. I'm like, man, who's pulling security in your post-apocalyptic whatever? Is it just you with all the guns? Do you ever sleep? Is anyone else cross-trained in these guns? How many of those guns can you shoot at the same time? And typically, I'd see guys who just hadn't really thought it through. He didn't realize that if something ever happened, I don't know what could happen. I don't know. These questions are above my pay grade. But if you entertain the idea that something may happen and you want to prepare yourself and your family, I think it requires a little bit more than just stockpiling food and water and resources, guns and ammunition. If your plan is just to stockpile it up, you are saving it for someone who can just come through and take it all. In 99% of the episodes I watched, I realized single-handedly I would be able to come and take everything that they had, and they wouldn't be able to stop me. I'll also say there was a few guys in those little episodes, and it was entertainment, so I'm not trying to overthink it. And a lot of your listeners, will, if they're kind of in that vein of thinking, I don't want to start a, you know, fight here of like, try to come get my, man, I'm not challenging your stuff. You got it. Good job. Yay for you for good plans. So I'm not picking a fight here, but I'm just saying a lot of the preps, because they didn't have a community on board, it's the lone wolf, I will survive with my family until Jesus comes back kind of mentality, like you didn't need anyone else. The two biggest preps I saw in that, when we're talking about kind of communal security plans, communities coming together, that awareness is to realize it would take a community to stay safe. Cut off, you're easy. You're easy. With a community, though, where you're pulling together, pooling resources, there are strengths in numbers. There is no army of one. It's a silliest slogan. Maybe I never understood it right. I should understand it right. I was in the army. But regardless, pooling resources and having a tight-knit community, I think, is probably your most important prep. You know, folks, you know, typically when I'm in the training world, and so folks hire me out to kind of feel like, all right, here's our group. Teach us, you know, concealed pistol. Make us fast and accurate. Here's our rifles. Make us fast and accurate. Here's our Talk with us about our home defense fund. I'm at, in a couple weeks here. I'm flying up to the Northeast to. There's a real neat dude, and he's just trying to make a holistic security plan, and he's flying me up to give him a security audit of his premises, and talk through security plans and do some various weapon training. But my first thing, I told him, all right, this is before we even pull up to your house, I want you to just drop me off the curb, and I'm going to spend some hours just out walking your perimeter and thinking, if I was a bad guy, how would I take this down?
Yeah,
kind of fun stuff. Just planning a raid, if anything. But kind of the biggest, you know, tools of preparation, I think, is to have other people who are of similar mind and also training that we can come together to make communities safer. Separated out, we're just too easy, too vulnerable. I'll let you get in here now,
yeah,
and you can
yeah,
steer the
exactly
ship.
Yeah, exactly right. John, we're up against our network break. But no, great points. And, you know, a lot of, one thing that came to mind is, a lot of people, like myself sometimes are antisocial. You don't want to be bothered. Finding a way to, you know, break the ice between neighbors. There's a lot of ways and a lot of things that can be done. We'll talk about that in another show.
Sure.
Because it is really simple. You just got to find the right opportunity. Folks, we will be right back after these short messages. Visit warriorpoetsociety.us. Warriorpoetsociety.us. We'll be right back after these short messages.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be.
Folks, I'm going to direct your attention to MasterPreps.com. MasterPreps.com. Wow. MasterPreps.com, the sponsor of our show, MasterPreps.com. That's MasterPreps.com. Take a visit there. High-quality items, made-in-America items. I mean, anything, everything you could possibly want, from cooking utensils, cooking frying pans. I mean, it is. It'll blow you away. Absolutely, Eric said.
It's insane. I mean, wow. Look at the products.
Folks, visit MasterPreps.com. Again, welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report family. MasterPreps.com. I mean, wow. It's insane.
MasterPreps.com. Are you ready for what comes next?
Hi, I'm Grace Gonzalez from Tang Personal Woods. We are an American family-owned company founded and built on skills and knowledge gained from responding to 18 major disasters in the U.S. and around the world. We found that most people don't have enough food and water to survive, let alone any medicinals to save their life. We're offering 25% off our must-have American Heritage Remedies Kit. It contains 12 homeopathic remedies, a booklet that goes over everything in your kit, and our brand new book, Major Disasters Lessons Learned. Just enter coupon code HAGMAN. In life or a disaster, you must be able to take care of yourself. You may not be a medical doctor, and your grandmother and your great-grandmother probably weren't either, but they still knew how to minister to their family's health issues, and so can you. Check out our American Heritage Remedies Kit at www.changepersonwoods.com. Your life may depend on it.
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Charles, the guy whose voice is heard announcing for the Hagman and Hagman Report right here on YouTube and across the Global Star Radio Network. There have been many people wondering whose music is being played during those breaks. Well, you guessed it. And we're very pleased to announce that all that music and 11 brand new songs from the CD New Jerusalem is set for release on April 10th for download on iTunes. That means you can help support my ministry and be blessed by this awesome, inspiring recording. I have been fortunate to work with some phenomenal musicians from around the world that helped us put this recording together in the studio. Simply go to joecharlesmusic.com and click on the iTunes link. Or, if you'd rather have a CD, we'll send one right out to you. Just leave me your email and we'll get right back to you. And thanks to Doug and Joe Hagman for making this all possible. God bless.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Hacking Report. We are talking with a very interesting guest. He has a fascinating background and is a, I guess you'd say, an instructor, a teacher of a number of things, including guns, weapons, home defense. He is a former soldier himself, Special Forces. He trains with tactics, with security, concealed carry, and so much more. And his website, again, is Warrior Poet. Oh, goodness. I'm drawing a blank. I got it right here.
Society.us. There you go.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're doing awesome.
WarriorPoetSociety.us. No, it's been a long day. None of us really got any sleep over here, so our brains are mush. Though before the break, that's we were cool. Talking about the community, building a community, and a community security plan. It's one thing to know your neighbors and to, you know, interact with them, and it's another thing to start getting into certain topics. Are you a prepper? Because usually you have to start getting into political and religious beliefs when you get into these kind of discussions. Do you have more practical ways to go about doing this that would not, we'll say, say you have a Hillary Clinton's number one fan who lives across from you, and you're a big Donald Trump guy, but you want to reach out and you want to get to know your neighbor, you want to build your community and your community security plan. Any suggestions on how to go about, you know, dealing with people who, you know, either hate you for what you believe or think you're crazy for even just wanting to get together?
Yeah, sure. Again, this isn't really in my wheelhouse as a tactics firearms instructor guy, but I don't mind speaking to it at all. I guess I'm speaking so often as an instructor, I want to be very quick to say, but this is fact, this is theory based on fact, and this is just me thinking through stuff. So as I just think a lot of this is just going to be real subjective. That's very, very unique to me. Personally, I really like people, and even the ones that try very hard to make me dislike them, I try to resist. So even somebody who has wildly different beliefs than me, first off, I just want to be sensitive to that and try as hard as I can to really meet them as just a human being and let them know, hey, you know what? I like you and we can disagree on all kinds of stuff. It's cool. I've got your back and whatever. Just try to make a friendship. I think there's a great theologian. He died back in the 80s. He's one of my favorite dudes, greatest philosopher and theologian I can think of, just kind of all rolled into one package in more modern sense. Francis Schaeffer. Died in 1982. But he said, love on display is the most effective apologetic. Apologetic is defense of the faith. And so for me personally, I just, that's just kind of how I'm put together of, I think that right there of just showing kindness and mutual respect and love and honor and letting her know, hey, I think she's important or he's important. I think that can do a whole lot. To step across, the party aisle and establish some goodwill. Her just normally, if we have a difference, she'll look at me kind of like I'm just this crazy gun-toting, Yosemite Sam conservative. And she's not really, I got kids and a wife and I'm just trying to be a good dude and, we have different political things, beliefs, and we have different views and stuff, but I don't wish you harm. I like you even. And I think that right there, that's probably one of the most powerful ways to start winning someone to your way of thinking, is investing in them and letting them know you care and allowing them to be free to just kind of calmly disagree. Listen to their arguments and thank them for giving them. Don't just contradict them. Be like, oh, well, thanks for sharing that. I can see if I believed in such and such how you arrived at that conclusion. But have you considered that if this was true, does that make sense? Just kind of offering my opinion, not in a heavy-handed kind of way. especially with my generation, the millennials, all those words were very careful in how I picked them and how I postured them so as to not allow, you know, people to get out of their own way. If you bring a heavy-handed authoritative argument and say, hey, that's stupid and this is the only way, you may make a point, but you never change anyone's mind. And some won't have some people say, that's stupid, I don't want to have to do that. And I'm like, great, then you're going to do a great job rallying your side. You'll be right. You make points, but you're not changing anybody. You're just loud. So that's my own kind of personal ways of how I'd conduct myself in that environment. I want people to know, hey, I like you. I'm for you, even if we disagree. And I think that goodwill is what wins people over. People know you like, you know, love covers over a multitude of sins. People know you love them. You can get away with just about anything. You can be just antithetical, philosophical, political views and, you know, believe in all kinds of stuff, but they know you really like them. They'll forgive you for a whole lot. And you can be friends, and out of that friendship, good conversations that result in maybe changed opinions and forward progress can result. So that's just me. That's how I roll.
Well, you know, that's a biblical way. At the same time, you know, you got to lead by the example and treat others how you want to be treated. And,
sure,
you know, as a Christian show, we need to understand that no matter who we're dealing with, we still need to live under the commandments in the way that the Lord told us to live. No matter, you know, how much somebody might hate us or, you know, state their dislike or whatever the case may be. And you know, it might not happen right away, but that's how trust and respect are earned. And
right.
When we're talking about forging relationships, that's the way it might have to be done sometimes. So,
sure thing. Yep.
Absolutely, absolutely great. Great advice.
Thanks, man.
Let's, if we can, we move on. We only have. We got about 20 minutes left of this interview.
Yeah, should we talk guns at all or anything?
Yeah, that's what I was just gonna. The next question: best weapon for home defense.
Ah, good one. All right, cool. So, I get this all the time. I did a YouTube video on it as well, best gun for home defense as well. And it's kind of a difficult question. The first answer I'd run to is, well, what do you have competency with? What are you really comfortable with? You know, military guys, special operations guys, SWAT team guys, they're all clearing rooms with what? Do you know?
M16?
Yeah. And really the more modern equivalents, the M4 carbine or the AR-15. And there's a reason why our most skilled operators are using that platform or similar platforms. It's not with pistol, and it's not with shotgun.
M2 Browning is no good for home self-defense?
No, absolutely not. And again, I'd real quickly say, hey, what are you real competent with? I think it causes unneeded damage when all of a sudden you're like, well, you know, my pistol and my .45 or my Mossberg or my, and everyone gets real upset that you have a different opinion for some reason. But no. He gets to like his own gun. That's okay. That's okay. I do prefer an AR. I'm very good with an AR. I will hit them exactly where I wanted to in a very small amount of time. I'll be able to control it. I can maneuver around angles inside and around structures very effectively. I have all my accessories and lights and optics all ready to go. And with an AR, I am very switched on. Pistols are harder. If you can get away from a pistol, you should. An AR-15 style gun or a shotgun is much better in many different respects. And those respects would be the damage they would inflict when they hit. So you could say killing power. The accuracy, it's far easier to be accurate with a shotgun or an AR than it is with a pistol. Pistols are very, very difficult to shoot accurately under time constraints and stress. It's very common even for folks with training, though they can hit the target at 5 yards every time when the clock isn't ticking and when they're not under stress, to conversely under stress and fear to miss the target every single shot for 5, 6, 7 rounds when it's in front of them. It's amazing, all the studies that have been done on this. ARs, even with someone that's untrained, that can just kind of point and shoot, and then you got 30 rounds. Think about ammo capacity. The one, my AR holds 30 rounds. That's a lot of chances. The killing power is fantastic. The accessories, very, very good. The ergonomics allowing me to mitigate recoil, to manage my recoil, is fantastic. The rate of fire, very good. My wife didn't really like the AR because it just looked so scary. She thought, no, that's something that's more militaristic. And she wanted the cute little tiny gun with the pink slide until we went to the range and she shot them both. And the very quickly, after a couple rounds, she's like, wow, the tiny gun is miserable to shoot. I hate it, and I can't hit anything with it. But it sure did look cute. And then she shoots the AR, which barks very loudly. But there's not a lot of recoil. It's just kind of like it's like a little tiny bump. It barks real loud, but it doesn't bite hard unless you're on the other end of it. So the AR for a home defense is wonderful. She can handle that. Now, I could run to shotgun if there's expansion of the shot group. It's not like people think. They think that if an intruder's on the other side of my house, I point a shotgun at them 10 feet away. It's going to, you know, kill anyone that's on that side of the house standing. And really, a shotgun grouping is an expanding at about 1 inch per yard. So if they're 15 feet away, that's just a 5-inch group. That's not as huge as you thought, right?
Right.
You still have to point, you still have to aim, and the difficulty with a shotgun is I'd like my home defense choice to be fit to the weakest shooter in the house. My wife, who's trained, she's good to go, but I fear that in the midst of a fight where she's terrified, freaking out, after she fired the first round and out of fear, would she preemptively, you know, fire a round too early? Would she have the fighter mindset in that quarter second response between rounds to be able to rack the shotgun, chambering another round to do business with? And I just feel in those situations something that was semi-automatic would be much, much better. I don't know whether she had to have the fighter mindset to rack a second round, even though she could do it on the range. I don't know, in the dark, terrified, 3 a.m., I'm not home, whether she would. And Scott's just did a lot of them will kick like a mule. So if you're going to go shotgun, I recommend a 20 gauge. If it's too long, it's just real hard to wield around corners. It'd be nice to have a light on it, a white light, and I want blinding power on it so that when you hit them with that white light in the eyes, they're seeing stars for 5 minutes. It just shuts them down. I'd like that. Shotguns can be a fantastic option in the sense of nothing puts people down like a shotgun. You hit somebody with triple-aught buck center mass at 5 yards with a shotgun, that's it, they're done, game over. There's pros and cons. The pros for a pistol, it's very easy to make it rapidly accessible. You know, you can kind of tuck it, put it anywhere, little hand safes, and it's very easy to wield around structures. Just hard to hit stuff with it, and it doesn't do a great job in terms of stopping threats quickly, not nearly like an AR or a shotgun would. So these are kind of the conversations I have with folks, and this can be really, really, folks get very upset. They get very particular about their weapon system and say, well, absolutely, I disagree with this guy. This guy doesn't know anything he's talking about. I've got my Colt 45 and it's by my bedside. And if anybody ever breaks into my house, I'm going to give it to him. You know, it's kind of great. Then use that gun. That's fantastic. Just get good training with it and understand there are strengths and there are weaknesses regarding your weapon system. Jesus did not descend on a cloud holding your Taurus 45 and say, this is the end-all be-all. You know, if there's strengths and weaknesses, pick what you think is best. Listen to guys like me who may bring up things you hadn't thought about before. And understand that if you're switched on with something, the best gun is the one you train with. So anyway, that was a lot of talking. Go ahead.
No. It's very informative. And me personally, I took a gun safety training class, and I had a 45 caliber that was probably my favorite handgun. It got stolen in a home burglary, but I haven't found a handgun that I like as much as the 45 caliber, how it worked for me. But a shotgun,
very good.
Too.
We should talk about calibers.
The shotgun, 12 gauge around, and it's I've never shot it yet. It's relatively new, but
yeah.
You know, you have to be aware. You know, if you're in your house, somebody breaks in, and you're going to be into a gunfight. How far your bullet's going to travel? Could they penetrate, you know, your walls, the neighbor's walls? There's a lot of reasons that you need to consider what type of weapons you would use for your home defense.
Absolutely.
You toss a grenade out, but you're going to destroy half your house. So, there's smarter
especially
there's
grenades
ways
in the movies. The grenades in the movies are they're like little miniature atomic bombs. It's massive.
Yeah, it's like how
explosion.
The same thing for the cars. How they make the cars blow up in the movies never happens in real life. But
yeah, you want to talk pistol calibers and just tick everyone off tonight?
Sure.
Yeah, why
absolutely.
Not? Pistol
Heck
calibers.
Eric said yes.
So, you know, there's an older school of thought that's like, you know what, I like a 45 because my 45, I just want to hit them once. You hit them with a 45, they're done. It'll knock them down. Knockdown power is why I like a 45. Some of them are so committed to the idea of the 45, the great 45 caliber, that they say, you know, if I just shoot it anywhere near them, they're going to die of fright because it was a 45. It's an older school of thought. The 45 caliber is dying. Very, very quickly. 45 is going out. What we found is it's not a slightly larger diameter bullet, like, say, for instance, from the 9mm up to the 40, up to the 45. The extra diameter is not what's putting folks down quickly. It's the placement of the round. That's what it is. It's the placement of the round. Most law enforcement agencies, they're carrying Glocks for a reason. And they're going in 9mm in droves. Competitive shooters, 9mm. Professional trainers, especially the newer wave that are shooting faster and more accurate than anyone ever has before. That's our generation now. We've got the fastest, most accurate shooters ever walking the planet right now. They're all shooting 9mm. I carry a 9mm for a very good reason. And here are the reasons. One, with the technology now of different defensive rounds, the expansion and damage that a 9mm is doing in a defensive round is something close to that of the 40 and 45. There's not a huge, huge difference anymore. And in fact, sometimes the 9mm is killing even better or stopping the threat even better in some instances. We've got a lot of data on the 9mm. But there's just been too many instances over the last decade of compiling all this data where they're like, all right, this lady was shot 7 times with a 45, and she got up, she got in her truck, and she drove away. On my YouTube channel, I interviewed a cop down in Florida. His name is Jared Reston. He got shot 7 times with 45 ACP close range, and 2 of them were in the face. I interviewed him. He was shot a lot with a 45, and guess what? It did not kill him. He was smiling. We're laughing and joking. I'm talking about the will to fight. That's an interview on my YouTube channel. But anyway, it's not doing what people thought it was. So what you're trading out, what you're trying to gain in the 45 is you hit them once in the finger and they lay down dead. No. It's the placement. Would you rather hit them in the shoulder with a 45 or in the forehead with a 22 short? And you say, oh, well, the 22. I'm like, yeah, it's the placement of the round. Now, anyone that can shoot a 45 well can shoot a 40 cal faster and more accurately because of recoil. Also, the guys who shoot 45, usually they have such shot anticipation problems. Me as a trainer, it presents unique challenges where it's really hard to get them to stop anticipating the shot, which is the main reason folks miss. Shot anticipation bleeds into bad trigger control. Bad trigger control moves into imparting movement to the gun during the shot cycle, causing huge variances in accuracy. Usually a right-handed shooter shoots down and left, and a left-handed shooter shooting down and right. Because of a multiple different compounding negative reasons. So typically, you with a 9mm or something, you can carry twice the amount of rounds. You can shoot it faster and more accurately, and it's far less expensive so that you can train more. Make sense?
Oh, absolutely.
Now, to absolutely, all your listeners... Sense. All your listeners, you guys, if you are just in this romantic love affair with your 40 or 45, you get to still like that, and you get to carry it, and that's fantastic, and it doesn't mean your gun is junk. I've got different calibers around my house. Just the one I conceal carry every day is 9mm. I also carry a little Silence 22 around with me, or suppressed 22, because America. And, you know, I've got different rifles that travel with me. So, anyway, and understand, I'm not Chicken Little thinking the sky's falling. This is my profession. I'm a firearms and tactics instructor. So I'll carry a little more firepower than the common man. But anyway, if you like a different caliber, you get to keep liking that, and that is just fine. But we are... understand there's a reason why seemingly the vast majority of pro trainers, ask them what they're carrying and they'll say, yep, Glock 19, you caught me. And there's other good guns too, MPs and whatever. Yeah. So,
John, we got about 3 minutes left of the interview. I don't know if there's anything that we did not talk about or hit on that you wanted to talk about. I know there are a few things before the show we mentioned. If we had time to get in, and we could. Well, what about spotting threats in public?
Sure. So what we're looking for is threat indicators. Threat indicators are letting me know that bad guys are around, and typically that manifests itself in different body language. One of the first and most obvious is, you know, of profiling what a person looks like, what they're wearing, and this is definitely not a fail safe, as some folks who are bad guys look just like everyone else. But some bad guys look like bad guys, and it's the first thing you notice. And so, though it's not politically correct, detectives, what are detectives except professional profilers of people? That's what they do. They profile people. They stereotype in some sense, because it's not racist. It's not bigotry. It's the law of probability, which they are forced to live with in the reality of every day on the streets. So that's typically what it is. Pay attention. Who doesn't look right? Other things are look for people who scan. Most people are so immersed in their technology, they don't look up, and they had no idea whether 30 people were standing around them, two people, or whether they were alone in their, you know, cafe. But have your head up and see who's scanning the room. Two people scan the room, three people. Bad guys scan the room looking for the good guys and scoping out the area to see whether they can get away with their crime and who presents a threat. Good guys also scan the area looking for bad guys. And then everyone else who's scanning the room that are looking for romance. And those are three very different scans. The good guy's scan typically is smooth, and it's not jumpy. It's not in a hurry. It'll start from one left, all the way left, work all the way right, pause over different people, return to them. And if you meet their gaze, they don't look down or away real quick. They'll go ahead and give you the good guy nod. Hey, man, I see you. Okay, cool. Yep. It's the good guy nod. Bad guys have more of a jumpy scan to them. They look left, look right, look down, kind of cut their eyes up while their brow is still pushed down, look around, and if you meet their gaze, they'll quickly look away as if they've been busted. Posturing of bladed stances, flexing hands, fidgeting, cold sweats, or flushed skin, 1,000-yard stares, a dipped chin is protective, shoulders rolled forward, rocking on the balls of feet, weight on the toes, threat focusing, staring at someone. All these are threat indicators that allow you to know somebody is planning something bad. And by the way, all of these individual traits are kind of, if you pick these in one, there's one, you'll think everyone's a bad guy. So it's kind of meaningless to have one of these, but when you pair two or three of these up, it means a lot. And so to be able to get good at this, you can really look at a crowd of 100 people and immediately spot the anomaly. And that's what we're trying to do in our situational awareness training.
John, you've taken us to the end of the interview. I want to thank you so much for joining us. WarriorPoetSociety.us is the website. Go there. Subscribe to his YouTube channel. Again, that's WarriorPoetSociety.us. John, thank you so much for coming on. We look forward to talking with you again in the future.
It was a pleasure.
Well, it was a pleasure to have you. We'll be right back, folks, after these short messages. You're listening to this edition of the Hagman Report. Stay tuned for a network break.
Just what kind of thriller predicts the future? In 3 days in the Belly of the Beast, Daniel Holdings wrote about the God Particle before CERN actually discovered the God Particle. In As the Darkness Falls, Daniel wrote about an Islamist terrorist confederacy that rose up out of Syria and declared a caliphate 3 years before ISIS was ever heard of. In his newest novel, Between the Veil, Daniel talks about a space between dimensions where supernatural beings can walk. He says that these novels are a warning from the Creator to his creation. Will war come to America? Will the world's economies collapse? Are we looking at increased earthquakes and volcanic activity? Will the United States fall into civil war? You can find all of Daniel's work at his website, DanielHoldings.com. That's DanielHoldings.com. All of these things and more are talked about in Daniel's books. To find out what's coming next, go to DanielHoldings.com.
Worldwide demand is making coconuts one of the highest-yielding cash crops available today. Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and many high-net-worth individuals have invested billions of dollars into coconuts for strong growth and solid long-term income. Yields could be as high as 18% or more per year. Capital appreciation and exceptional income for up to 60 long years would be an absolutely brilliant investment to pass on to future generations. Diversify wisely with direct ownership of fully managed coconuts on prime farmland close to the beautiful Costa Rican border. For more information, qualified accredited investors should go to profitsincoconuts.com or phone 855-888-6288. That's 855-888-6288. This announcement does not constitute an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offer made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288 or visit profitsincoconuts.com. Profitsincoconuts.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.